Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Howard Simon and Jeremy White.
There's two things your stupid show talks about. One,
Howard Simon.
One,
Jeremy White.
Both suck.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
I got another funny story to tell you from my last vacation we were just on. Haven't brought it up yet. That's coming up.
And I'd like to see if you can give me a minute or two to talk about zombie deer disease.
Yeah, all right.
Did you know that's a thing?
A disease that only affects zombie deer?
No.
Oh.
It's a disease that essentially turns deer into zombies.
Zombie deer.
And it could be picked up by human beings.
Okay. Would it make people into zombie deers? Or?
Well, we don't know. See, that's the thing. And I'm not trying to make fun of it because apparently it's
could
like
wipe out civilization?
No, not necessarily. But it's one of those things where, like, you know, you're walking in the hall, you walk through the newsroom, right? We got televisions on in the newsroom. So they're watching all the different networks. And you look up and you see a little headline at the bottom of the screen. And it just kind of catches your eye, like, zombie deer disease. And I thought, what the hell is zombie deer disease? So I looked it up, and apparently it's an issue. And we are one of 24 states that has had a case of zombie deer disease. The deer, the brain wastes away, okay? It eats away at their brain, this disease, and they essentially turn into zombies.
What do they do?
They're lethargic. They don't know. They're not responsible for their actions. I don't know. It's really weird, but it just...
I mean, you say the word zombie...
They don't walk around like looking like, you know, with glass-eyed.
Let's be honest. Zombie in 2019 means you are...
Walking dead.
Something like that. Yeah. You are actively, as a zombie,
yeah,
turning other deer into zombies.
Yeah, no, they're not.
That's not happening?
No, they're not
okay,
doing
well,
that.
Well, then I'm less concerned about it.
Yeah, I don't...
That's what zombies do. They turn others into zombies.
Yeah, that I don't think that's an issue with the zombie deer. I don't think they're converting other zombies, other healthy deer into zombie deer. But it is an issue with the deer. It's reported in 24 states. It's happened in one county in New York State, I believe in the Adirondacks. Anyway, if you're a hunter, they are telling you to don't touch roadkill, to wear gloves when you dress deer, and to test deer meat before you eat it. Because of the possibility of this actually affecting human beings.
All right.
I just thought zombie deer disease caught my eye. Like, if you want to put something up on a television screen to make me watch your newscast, zombie deer disease was one of those things that could do that.
Good to know.
All right. I'm trying to find a defenseman for the Sabres to trade for.
A defenseman to trade for.
I wanted to change it up today, you know, for the ideal trade. We're coming up with an ideal trade each day of the week.
I've got one.
Dougie Hamilton.
Zach Bogosian for... 23andMe DNA swab of Connor McDavid. You want to talk about trading for futures? Give me Connor McDavid's DNA. He can just spit into a little vial. You'll save it. We'll clone him, and we'll have him in 18 years.
Do we have that technology?
Do we have to
cloning? Yeah.
I got to wait that long, huh?
It's a futures bet. It's a futures trade.
I mean, I'm not 40. You know, I'm not 40. How old are you?
Almost 40.
I'm 56, man.
Yeah, all right. I mean, you don't want to wait that long.
Colton Parayko, there
you
go.
Well, the backup plan is to wait for these three first-round draft picks to turn into really good things.
It's Colton Parayko. Trade Ristolainen, give the Blues their pick back, throw in something else if you want, and get 25-year-old Colton Parayko.
I'm not going to let you do that. They're good now.
I know they're not going to trade him, but it's our ideal trade. Okay. It's not their ideal trade. The spot is called ideal trade.
Ideal trade.
So my ideal trade is... Colton Parayko.
My ideal trade is going to be find a GM that thinks Ristolainen is really, really good and trade him there and get stuff back.
There's probably people in the league that
I would imagine there are.
A young defenseman who gets you 40-ish points and plays on your power play and your penalty kill and gets top 4 minutes for you. And a team that doesn't need him to be a top two guy, that he could be a 3-4 guy. I bet you could find somebody for that. Our ideal trade... And we're coming up these every day, going up to the trade deadline, is presented by the Ideal U Weight Loss Center. Call 631-THIN for the Ideal U Weight Loss Center in Clarence, West Seneca, or Tonawanda. So there's a little variety in the spice of life, so I thought I'd go from winger to defenseman. Tomorrow I got to find a center. I'm not trading for a goalie at any point this week.
Yeah, a couple of things that have come about. So since that Phil Housley thing, Ryan Stimson, I mentioned him from The Athletic, and I also have a piece here from Chad DeDominicis of Die by the Blade about Housley and about Ristolainen, mm-hmm. respectively. First is Ryan tweeting this. Since Phil Housley took over, the Sabres generate the second fewest high-danger shots per 60 minutes.
It's probably not a good stat to have. You'd want to have more high-danger shots. Honestly, I think you look at the New Jersey game, 35 shots. How many were really, you know, great quality scoring chances? Three? Four? A lot of the stuff was from the point. A lot of the stuff was off the perimeter. Stuff with nobody in front, no traffic, no screens, nobody there for rebounds. You know, Mittelstadt had a couple of beauties. Eichel had a pretty good one. That might be all I can remember in terms of top-notch scoring chances with, you know, within close proximity of the net. So that's probably not a good stat, which is why I was thinking about players going to the net and the lack thereof on the team this morning.
Well, second fewest in high-danger shots per 60. You know, you could say it's... We just always do this. Is it just some miracle that the Sabres have somehow acquired every player that doesn't do that? Or does maybe the coach, his defensive system, his breakout, would it not generate those chances as well as maybe other systems do? I mean, this is always like this loose thing in hockey. I'm not a hockey coach. I'm not here to tell you. It is definitely his system. But results should matter. And the stat I was going over earlier is that in order to equal their point total, from the 2 years before Housley, they have to get to 97 this year.
What are they at, 63? So you got to get 34 points out of 48 that are left.
That if they did that, then those first 2 years of Jason Bottrell would be equal on points to the two first years post-tank. Just putting that out there. It really is amazing, though. Yesterday it happened again. It always happens when the Sabres get on a rough stretch. The only reason we still talk about the tank is because they're bad. Other teams do it, get out of there, and they just don't talk about it anymore.
Yeah.
Toronto doesn't sit here debating whether or not it worked. They got their player, and they're good now.
Yeah.
But yet here, somehow, and you're making a joke about the end of civilization. I made a joke about the end of civilization yesterday, that in 2037 with the Sabres in their new coastal arena, because, you know, global warming and sea level rise.
I got it. Sure.
2037, they will still be bad, and people will still be saying it's because of the 2015 season. The tank didn't work.
Well, look.
Like, how many years of GMs making the wrong moves and coaches not getting results will it be the reason that they're bad will be 2015? I mean, it's relentless. So
I think it can wear out when when you turn the roster over a second time, you can no longer blame the tank. And they've done that. Tim Murray came in and turned the roster over. Well, at first he gutted the roster to have the tank, and then he started making moves to build, and it didn't work out. And Jason Bottrell came in and had 10 new starters in season number one.
And then
overturned it again. So I think when you turn the roster over a second time, you stop blaming the tank.
But who are
it's
the
a short shelf
if
life.
You're Bottrell, I mean, a couple guys have made it through since the tank, right? Juergensen's, Larson, Ristolainen.
Yeah, McCabe.
Bogosian was traded for in that season.
Okay.
So, I mean, he didn't really survive through it.
I think that's it.
I mean, at some point, how has Ristolainen made it this far?
Because he's young.
And he eats minutes, and
it's not a terrible contract in terms of amount of money. What does he make, five?
It's beefy.
But he's a top four player. So in theory, he's a top four. Well, on this team, he's been a top two defenseman.
Right.
So that's not bad money for a top two defenseman. But he's young. He eats minutes. He's out there power play, for penalty kill.
Isn't he who he's going to be? He's not growing anymore.
I think he's a guy who is to frustrate you because at times you wonder, where is his head at? And some of the decisions he make are puzzling.
And the numbers back it up that he does not help them win games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll read some of the stats here from Chad DeDominicis at DieByTheBlade.com. The negatives outweighing the positives. On this team, when it comes to expected goal differential, he's bad. The only players worse. Ready? Oposo, C.J. Smith, Marco Scandella, Beaulieu, Hunwick, and Thompson. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah, right.
Your top four defender making over five is right there, and he leads the team in ice time. He's on the ice all the time. There's a reason that they lose all the time.
Well, he was top two defender until they drafted Dahlin.
He's negative or replacement level in goals above replacement. He is on this team. Go to Die by the Blade and read this. I don't want to tell you everything. But he has the highest percentage of failed zone exits on the team.
That's not
good. Second lowest percentage of exits with possession.
So he's either turning the puck over or he's making a bad pass. Something's happening to prevent the breakout.
He's hurting you. Mm-hmm. And then offensively, you know, sometimes people think about Corsi and about shot share. Mike and I were talking about a play in the game on Friday. You and I talked about it. We were sitting at the game together. The Sabres gain the zone on the power play, and there's a drop pass for him at the blue line. And Mike said he took a one-timer. I thought he took a wrist shot. I don't know what it was. Right into the glove of the goalie.
Right. And there was
face-off.
He just blew the because there was nobody there.
And then they lose the face-off, and it's down the ice. And you ask, what's wrong with the power play? Sometimes it's something as simple as you just got possession, and your defenseman, who makes over $5 million a year, punted it to the goalie.
It's funny. I think Dahlin did the same thing in New Jersey.
Yeah?
He gained the blue line and just flipped the puck towards the net, and Schneider had an easy glove save, and I think, on the power play.
It's about the decisions that you make and maintaining possession. And, you know, does Risto have some talent and some great abilities? Sure, we've seen it. We've seen some great goals from him this year. But if, on the whole, I am more often in my own end than in that end, then I got to get rid of that guy.
Especially if breakouts and D-zone coverage have been a problem. And again, well, I think the Risto line of discussion really comes down to this. If we're going to fast forward into off-season mode, because I'm not expecting a big trade between now and Monday. Okay, so if they were moving Ristolainen, this to me is an off-season move. The reason why you have the discussion on Ristolainen is if you're looking at value you're willing to give up, or a player that you believe has value with another team in the league, I would think he'd be and you're willing to trade. He's at the top of the list because you're not trading Eichel, you're not trading Dahlin. I doubt you're trading Reinhardt. He's had a very good season. I'm very happy with everything I've seen from Sam Reinhardt. The rest of the list, now you're getting to, the only other guy I guess I'd throw in this discussion is Mittelstadt among the forwards, and I wouldn't think they're going to move him, a young guy who you hope is going to turn into your number two center. So Ristolainen is really, if you're looking for a player who you think has value, that you're willing to move off your roster and can get you a good return, it's him. The only other guy on defense might be, I don't know, Pilot, but again, I don't think it's Ristolainen. That's why you have this discussion. And I like Ristolainen. I do. I've always liked him. I think he's a good player. Obviously, we came to a point where we realized he's not a top defenseman. He can't be that guy. He's not good enough to be your number one defenseman. That's going to be Rasmus Dahlin, if it isn't already. He's not your Aaron Ekblad. I just picked him out. He will help your team in a 3-4 role, not a 1-2 role. So the question is there a team in the league you think that believes in his value and you can get something for him because he's the best trade chip. He's the best trade chip you can dangle,
for sure.
Assuming Eichel, Dahlin, Reinhardt, Mittelstadt are not going anywhere.
Granted, we did have a caller yesterday that said no team in the league would want Eichel.
Of course not.
Texter writes in, if he's so bad, why would anyone want Risto?
There are different
measures, but I am convinced you could find a GM that would think, I'm all about it. Peter Chiarelli was one of them. He would have given you Taylor Hall. He didn't do that, which maybe that's for the best because, you know, you've got Rasmus Dahlin. So the thing about Risto, I mean, like I said, there are some positives to his game. But seeing Dahlin as an 18-year-old drives home what a real number one defenseman is supposed to look like.
Well, Ristolainen just has lapses and breakdowns that you just shouldn't have. He's young by age, but he's not young by NHL standards.
He's
enough games in this league to know, to be better at his decision making, to be better at his choices in terms of breakouts and some of the things he does and when to pinch, when not to pinch. Sometimes in the defensive zone, losing guys in coverage or the decisions he makes, and he's not alone. Sadly, this is a problem that permeates itself throughout this team. Their split-second hockey decision-making is lacking in many different areas, and it's been exposed over the course of the season. But with Ristolainen, it's troubling because he's been in the league long enough that he should know better on some of these things. And, Pilot, if Pilot makes a bad decision, okay, it's his first year in the league. He's 22, he's not 18, but it's his first year playing in North America, and you're going to figure he's going to go through those things. Dahlin, still has the occasional turnover and decision where you're going, okay, what are you doing? But it shouldn't happen as often as it does to Ristolainen. I don't think he's bad. I don't think he's a top two. I think you would be able to find a GM in this league who looks at Rasmus Ristolainen and says, there's value in there. This guy doesn't have to be my shutdown pair defender, but he's going to be in my 3-4 pairing, and I'll make it work. How much it gets you on the trade market remains to be seen, but I think he would have value around that.
What is a shutdown defender in today's
NFL? I mean, the guy you put on your top two and say,
right.
You're going to be out there for the key defensive zone draws late in the game or hanging on to a one-goal lead. You're on my number one penalty kill. You're out against the top line if I'm matching defensive pairs at home against the top line. You're that guy. I'm going to lean on.
But shutdown now is you have the puck, right?
I do know what you mean. He's going to be out on the ice all the time.
I do know what you mean. And that's what I'm saying. Is like, it shutdown is not, I mean, Ristolainen and Scandella go out there. Right. That's what Housley thinks is put my defensive guys out there. Housley's the guy that puts Vladimir Sobotka in a defensive zone faceoff because he thinks that's my shutdown guy instead of the better player who might get the puck in
overtime.
Right.
In a 3-on-3.
Right.
He's out for a defensive
zone. He's out for very specific role-based stuff about defense.
Yes. Well, your shutdown guy is also a guy who can get the puck up ice. It's supposed to be a mobile defenseman. It's supposed to make a good breakout pass or carry the puck up. I mean, that's Dahlin. It's supposed to be Rasmus Dahlin. It will be Rasmus Dahlin going forward. It's supposed to be an all-around guy who is good in his own end, but also can get you out of trouble by carrying the puck out of the zone or making a good first pass to somebody else. And that's, consistently, if you're looking for consistency, it's not Rasmus Ristolainen. But Ristolainen's appeal to this franchise had been, he was their, by default at the very least, he was their number one defenseman until they drafted Rasmus Dahlin.
I would say he is consistent.
Oh, I don't think he's consistently bad.
What you see from him is who he is.
Yeah.
And that's why I just think that the best way to, this is the tough thing about being a GM. We never get to know the conversations. We never get to hear what the offers were. I'd love to get Jason Botcher on the show and say, can you tell us one trade you didn't make? Well, it was close, but you can't talk about a player on another team.
Well,
were you ever close to acquiring a forward? Were you, we don't get to know that stuff.
I'd be curious to know, I guess in the Ristolainen discussion, you'd also ask him, do you get calls on Ristolainen? Serious? Any serious calls on Rasmus Ristolainen?
Yeah.
And if you turned it down, is it because you didn't think it was enough value coming back, or you have a high opinion of Ristolainen and where his place is in this organization going forward?
Yeah.
And I don't. Obviously, we don't have that answer for you.
So you want the funny story from vacation? We're in Colorado, in Denver, and we're staying at this. I'm just interested to know how different people would approach this situation. We're staying at this hotel. You just find some place in a new blossoming neighborhood. It was nice. Nice hotel. Very boutique. I don't know. What am I looking for? Millennial boutique hotel.
Right up my alley.
Right. Here's how millennial boutique it was. We had bunk beds.
Bunk beds?
Bunk beds.
In the room you stayed
in? We got a room, walked in.
Is that a thing now, really?
These are bunk beds. Yeah.
That's like a hot thing now?
I don't know if it's a hot thing. I've never seen it before, but we had bunk beds. Why?
I guess I would immediately call the front desk and go, hey, what's up?
Yeah. The same thing. We're like, well, what do we do? Do you want to get a different room? Or?
When you reserve the room.
I had no idea.
It doesn't say like king, queen, double, bunk.
I didn't see the bunk.
Okay.
Uh-uh. No.
I would walk in the room and turn to my wife and go, what the hell?
Dibs on top bunk?
No, actually, it's too much effort climbing up to the top bunk.
It's not, dibs on top bunk.
Dibs on top bunk. No, I would take the bottom bunk and then I would kick the bed all night. Go, hey, you still up there?
Yeah.
I'd just be a real jerk.
Poke the top of it.
Bunk bed? So did you keep the room?
We did.
How were the bunk beds?
Fine.
Okay. Slept all right?
Yeah.
No problems?
Shared a bunk.
Bunk beds.
Yeah.
Thinking of redoing your house now?
With bunk beds?
Yeah.
It wouldn't make a difference. No difference.
Okay. Maybe I didn't realize. Okay. Maybe that's a thing now.
Yeah. The Ramble Hotel.
Maybe you can request bunk beds the next time you go stay somewhere.
I don't think we will.
No. Okay.
But it was a nice place, and they had lots of, It was a cool neighborhood.
Okay.
Denver, folks. Get to Denver.
Did you get into downtown Denver?
Oh, yeah,
you
lots.
Because you were in Steamboat Springs.
Walked
you
all did, around.
What is it, Lodo? That's the big bar area?
Lodo's bar is the Bill's Backer Bar.
Yeah.
There's a 16th Street Mall, very good, you know, like a walking mall where there are no cars allowed on 16th Street.
Yeah, yeah.
Just buses.
Cleveland's got something like that where they block off car traffic.
Kind of like a main street in downtown Buffalo a little bit. But
I seem
but
to recall,
with people, but with lots of people.
In Denver, it's been a while. But I remember going out there for a Rockies game, and I seem to recall going out to dinner before the game, and there was just an area, that's why I thought it was Lodo, just an area of restaurants and bars, like outdoor restaurants and people hanging out, you know, eating, drinking before going over to Coors Field, whatever they call it now, for Rockies baseball. So
I have not been there
beautiful
for a game.
With the view of the Rocky Mountains and where you are at the baseball field,
yeah,
it's gorgeous.
It is definitely on the list of stadiums I want to see a baseball game at.
Nice. Again, this was a long time ago, but very nice stadium. But, I mean, how do you beat the – hey, what's going on? I don't know. Sun is setting, and there are the Rocky Mountains beyond the left field wall. That's pretty awesome stuff. It's breathtaking view.
Yeah. It's – mountains are, you know, seeing mountains. That's the thing about Denver that's so fascinating to me, whether you're flying in or you're driving in, is that it is the plains.
Mm.
And then
I think
Denver
that's what's cool about Vegas.
And the mountains.
Vegas, you fly in, well, there's nothing, nothing, nothing. All of a sudden, hey, there's a city down there.
Yeah.
Inside those mountains. Like, there is nothing around there. And then all of a sudden, you notice the strip, the hotels, and Vegas in this little, you know, hole in the ground, so to speak, inside the mountains. I thought that was really cool.
I haven't been to Vegas since, I want to say, it blew up. It got way bigger. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of new hotels.
Oh, yeah. We were there a couple years ago.
Yeah?
Yeah. The Strip. There's so many hotels I couldn't even name anymore. The traditional ones are there all the time. But downtown, you know, the older portion of Vegas, Fremont Street, I believe is what it's called.
Yep.
That's a really cool place. I had never been there before.
Well,
we always did the Strip because I felt like that's what you're supposed to do when you go to Vegas.
We're going in a couple months, and I've never been to
Fremont Street.
I've never been to Fremont Street. Every time I've gone, I've been the Strip, and this time we'll be on Fremont Street.
I had people tell us who live in Vegas and say, the next time you come here, stay at a hotel, casino, whatever.
On Fremont?
Down on Fremont Street, because there's so much going on down there. Again, your perception is, no. You want to be on the Strip, whatever. Caesars, MGM, name it, Bellagio, whatever. And walk up and down the Strip, which is really cool, because all these hotels have themes and different things going on. But we went down to Fremont Street. There's a big outdoor, same thing. Streets closed off to car, to vehicle traffic. So it's open to just walk around wherever you want. Restaurants, bars, shops. You got like a zip line going. They've got bands performing. There's an outdoor concert all the time. It was great. So as long as you don't mind all the noise from the outdoor concerts, if you're staying down at a hotel down there, it's a fantastic place to be. I always thought it was the Strip. Nope. Just go stay downtown. It's really cool.
Texter asks if I explored the Denver airport conspiracy. You know anything about that?
Didn't know there was a Denver airport conspiracy.
So the Denver airport has long been a hotbed for conspiracy theories. There are people that think a lot of weird things about it. So
about what? Conspiracy theories about
let me see here.
In particular? Or?
Yes, lots.
Huh.
So as the Denver airport recently remodeled, they put up a bunch of signs that they were remodeling. And in doing it, they kind of trolled their own conspiracy theories. One of the signs says, construction or cover-up? And another one...
Good for them. They got a sense of humor.
And another one's a picture of a lizard person asking, like, are we building... Whatever, the lair for the lizard.
What is this, like Area 51? They're keeping aliens in the Denver airport?
There's,
UFOs?
Yeah.
Really?
There have been people that have said a lot of weird things about the Denver airport. And that
I never knew that.
Yeah, that it is the place where weird stuff happens. Who knows?
I now you have me intrigued to go do a Google search.
I mean, you'll find some wacky stuff.
Hey,
but at
man,
least
I'm
they
kind of
they leaned into it.
I'm all ears for this. Okay, cool. The darkest conspiracy theories about the bizarre Denver airport. Great. I can't
look into it.
Lizard people, huh? Okay, thanks.
A lot going
man.
On in Colorado.
I need
What's
to get
not
out
to
there,
like?
Apparently. Yeah, is any of the conspiracy stuff tied in with legal marijuana usage?
I think it actually predates that because the Denver airport was 1995.
It's been around for a while, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, then. 803-0550 to join us.
The one thing I always think about if you've ever flown in or out of Denver. Taking off takes forever. You have to take
it's been so long since I've been there.
Just like a longer takeoff.
Taxi? Like taxi out
to
get
the
runway
off the
ground. Like getting off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I didn't.
And I haven't fact-based this or checked this, but.
Wouldn't that be standard no matter? Like the size of the airplane determines how long you have to go before you get up
I'm
to a certain
I'm talking about the airport. not the plane.
No, I know, but like takeoff time, isn't that fairly standard based on...
Sure, but I think each plane would have a different takeoff time in different places.
And
Denver being at 5,000 feet altitude, would that mean that it takes longer?
Yeah,
in my head, this makes sense.
So there's a terrifying 32-foot-tall statue of a giant horse with fiery glowing eyes at the Denver airport that it's famous for.
Okay. I've seen that horse. I don't think it's terrifying.
Even creepier, the red-eyed statue called Blue Mustang killed its sculptor, Luis Jimenez.
Okay, that's weird.
It fell on him and severed an artery. This is a fun article.
That's tough.
I got to tell you, I might just fly out to Denver just to see this stuff. Inside the airport, there are murals of a devil jumping out of a suitcase, as well as a statue of, is it Anubis, the ancient Egyptian god of death.
Yeah.
Some of the most controversial murals have been removed. They featured a character that resembled a Nazi officer in a gas mask, children in front of a burning building, and kids gathered around a knife. What the heck is going on at the Denver airport? Okay. This is very strange. Hey, I know we're supposed to go to break, but man, you got to come up with this stuff more often.
I thought it was just weed they were smoking over there.
They might be doing some other serious stuff. This is, I got to finish reading this article. Illuminati headquarters? Really? This is really funny. Okay, can you spare me another 30 seconds?
More on the Denver airport?
Yeah, okay. Other theories suggest since plaques depict the Masonic square and compass symbol, it must be an Illuminati group. Adding fuel to that fire, I love this stuff, is the date of the airport's dedication. It was March 19th, 1994. If you add those numbers, 191994, you get 33, the highest level you can achieve in Freemasonry, which represents perfection. You know, there's a show on TV on one of the conspiracy theories. I watch it. You got to find out about this stuff and add to this. Hey, this is cool. Thanks. All right, when we get back, college basketball talk. You be home tonight. We're going to chat with... Nate Oates, he's coming up in a moment. Our deal of the day involves fresh air. Who's not for clean, pure, fresh air? You can clean up the air in your home with air duct and dryer vent cleaning from Pure Air Care. It's just $99. Save over $150 with Pure Air Care. It is the deal of the day. To take advantage of it, all you need to do is go to mybuffaloperks.com.
Perkins headed the key, tries a three again. He hit it again. Perkins is feeling it. Nick Perkins, fourth triple of the second half. 70-62 Buffalo, and Toledo has called a timeout.
UB, I saw Joe Lenardi has him as a 7 seed right now in his latest bracketology. Also saw one that had Syracuse as an 8 seed. And getting into the tournament.
I think it was Lenardi's? I know one of the brackets I saw over the weekend had them in the same bracket as Michigan State.
Ooh, UB?
Yeah.
Very good.
That could be a potential second round issue in our home. We're going to talk to Nate in a moment. The Bulls are home tonight, and they'll take on Ohio. The Bulls are still, tied for the best record in the MAC with Bowling Green at 10-2. They are 22-3 overall. They do have 4 of their last 6 games at home, where, by the way, they're unbeaten. And they are tied for the 3rd longest home streak in the country. So, good things. We'll tell you it's a 7 o'clock game. And if you can't make it out to the arena, it is going to be heard on ESPN 1520. It is also on ESPN Plus. And we're going to go to the Western Hotline. You'll be Coach Nate Oates joining us here. Nate, it's Howard and Jeremy. Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Do you have a Google alert when Joe Lenardi does the old bracketology so you can see your latest projected seed?
You know, but I different projections. So I actually showed our guys. I think one of the latest ones after that Kentucky-Tennessee game, they had. I saw we were a 7 and Kentucky was a 2. So I took like 3 minutes of highlights of the Kentucky game, and showed our guys the next morning. I'm like, as of right now, if you want to make the Sweet 16, this is who you're gonna have to beat. So. Kentucky was playing at a pretty high level that day.
Do you, Nate, do you think it's interesting you you talk about it so openly. Like, some coaches might say, oh, I don't pay attention to that stuff. But I don't know. Do you think that looking at that goal and looking at the bar you'd have to pass to get to the Sweet 16 kind of takes the – not just takes the pressure out of it, but it makes the guys more comfortable to talk about their goals as a team openly?
You know what? I think they know where they want to get. We made it past the first round last year, and everybody says they want to go further. So if we're going to have to go further, I mean, that's made it to the Sweet 16. If you're going to go to Sweet 16, you got to be one of the, at least on that one given weekend in March, you got to be one of the 16 best teams in the country. And right now we're not. You know, we're close, though. We can get there, but I also think it shows how hard it is to get to Sweet 16. Everybody talks about Sweet 16, you know, and our women did it last year. It's not that easy. There's really good programs that haven't been to the Sweet 16 in years, if ever. So, I mean, it's hard to do. I think that was kind of my point to our guys. Like, we're having a great year. You know, we're 22-3. Like, nobody can take what we're doing away from you. We've been in the top 25 for all but 1 week of the season, but if you really want to make it to the next round of the tournament, this is who you're going to have to beat. So, yeah, we do keep an eye on it a little bit. I think if you pay too much attention to it, then it'll take away from what you're trying to do on a day-to-day basis. But I don't think it's stupid to pay attention to it a little bit.
Yeah,
Nate, I know earlier this season we talked about being the hunted, and I think it's interesting as you go around the MAC. I'm guessing you're like the top road draw, by the way. You go into Toledo and the place is packed. Yeah. Kent State, they were loaded up for you guys. The fans were all pumped up. Northern Illinois stormed the court when they beat your guys. What's that experience been like for you and your players?
You know, they stormed the Northern and Bowling Green both. Hmm. I think it's good, though. Like I've told our guys before, though, I mean, you know, like when I talked to them about the Kentucky-Tennessee game, I said, look, Kentucky gets the opportunity to play the number one team in the country, Tennessee. Like, we're not. Now, we're getting everybody's best shot, so it's a lot better, you know, than getting their average shot, because at least we're playing against the best version of everything they've got, but we still don't have the luxury of playing against Tennessee on a given night, so we've got to do what we can with what we've got. And right now, I think it's the best thing for us to take everybody's best shot. And I think our guys, you know, I can't speak for them, but I hope, you know, after the talks I've had with them, I hope they appreciate the fact they're getting everybody's best shot. Now, we haven't had the greatest starts to games here lately, so I don't know. You know, I told them they're going to have to figure that out on their own. I don't have an answer for that. Like, I think it shows some character that we've been able to come back from down 18 and we're down 17-4 against Toledo, but we got to do a much better job starting games out than we've been doing here lately.
You stole one of my questions, Nate. You know, Toledo, Central Michigan, and I think Kent State are games where you kind of got down early and were able to come back, and I was curious if there's any rhyme or reason to the first 6, 8, maybe 10 minutes where sometimes you're turning the ball over and shots aren't falling.
Yeah. I don't have the answer. If I had the answer, I'd fix it, and then we won't be doing it anymore. We've talked about it. We've tried to do different things. You know, the Central Michigan one was a little bit different. You know, CJ's shoulder was messed up, and he didn't think he could go. Perkins
was benched.
Played the first half.
Yep.
Carruthers had his foot deal, but like the Toledo one, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that was. And once you get down 17-4, you just got to figure out a way to climb your way back in. And I thought our guys did a pretty good job climbing their way back into that game and showing some character, especially, for the last 30 minutes of that game, I thought we were pretty dominant. But first 10 minutes, we were awful.
Nate Oates with the Sierra Western Hotline. There's one guy I wanted to ask you about, and I don't know if we bring him up, and I feel like he doesn't get enough credit. You know, everybody knows about Nick. They know about CJ. They know about Jeremy. To me, Dante Carruthers, I don't know, how would you describe his importance to this team, and is it fair to say he's an unsung hero? Because I don't think he gets talked about a lot.
Yeah, he's definitely crucial to what we're doing. He's probably a little more unsung than those other three guys. You know, when you started saying, I'm going to bring somebody up, I didn't know who you were going to bring up because Montel's been sure. pretty good for us, too.
And
but
J-Von,
Carruthers is, Carruthers was defensive player of the year 2 years ago. So everybody's known about his defense. I think it's his offense mm-hmm. that's kind of surprising some people, maybe. But if you go back, he led the entire state of New York in scoring his senior year in high school. You know, and he averaged 10 points a game at Midland as a freshman. And that's arguably the best junior college league in the country. So he's been able to score. I think taking the year, you know, he didn't play his sophomore year because he had the broken foot. And I think, you know, that ends up being about a year and a half off from basketball. I think that hurt him his sophomore year. He kind of messed with his head a little bit. And he was never a great shooter. And so people could kind of play off him. People were literally guarding him with their foreman. They were sitting their foreman in the middle of the paint and guarding him when, like, his sophomore year. So he worked really hard turning himself into a shooter. He had some injuries last year. I think this is the first year where he's been able to showcase the fact that he's put all his time in working on his shot, and he's been healthy for the majority of the year, and he's so good going downhill at the rim, and now yep. that you got to honor his shot, yeah, I mean, he's a tough cover. And really, I mean, you guys are kind of sports junkies and know what you're talking about, but if you look, like, we've had Jeremy struggle a little bit. CJ's had mm-hmm. some Jeremy's been a little off. Nick struggled. I mean, Dante's kind of carried us on the offensive end here for about 3 weeks. He's had 28, 21, 16. I forget. He's been scoring it really well here for about the last month. So he's been big to what we're doing here over the last month.
You just said that we know what we're talking about. If you could say that again a little
so
more.
So we could put it in an
yeah,
open?
Yeah, we could really use that. <I'm kidding.
laughs> It's like the movie review. You know, we're going to yeah. take the best clip yeah. out of what you said and use that.
I got to agree with what Nate said today. Really, really great stuff from the coach. So,
hey, Nate, the last thing I want to ask you about, your home win streak. Tied for third longest in the country. Not to jinx it, but what kind of is it?
I don't even know what it is.
22, I believe. 22, going back to last season.
Tied for third. I know Houston's won.
Were tied for second with Tennessee, I thought. And I think Michigan maybe.
They got a couple more than us.
I think Michigan might be ahead of you.
I got you.
It's funny. You may have just answered my question. I want to know if you guys talk about it. Is it a point of pride? Are players talking about that, or no big deal?
That's one that we really haven't talked about.
Okay.
To be honest with you,
yeah.
I didn't know where it was or who was in front. We are trying to protect home court, and I think we've set ourselves up to have a great finish here. You know, we were 7-2 halfway through conference. A little disappointed, you know, guys. Some, you know, people are talking. Could you run the table? That's the other thing. I don't think people realize how hard conference play is. And you're talking about running the table in conference play, and these guys are so familiar with you, and you almost have to be close to perfect for 18 straight games. Like, that's really hard to do in a good league. So once we got that out of the way, you know, we weren't going to do that. We're 7-2. You know, we talked about trying to close, but we've got six games left. We're two-thirds of the way through conference. We're tied with BG in first place, and we've got four of our last six at home. So we've set ourselves up to have a pretty good finish here. And really, it's in our hands. If we want to win the conference outright again, it's 100% in our hands. We just went out. We take care of business because we got BG at home the last game of the year. So I think that's more what we're talking about than, you know, now, obviously the – home winning streak will take care of itself if we do the other things. But it is nice, and we're selling games out. Shoot,
yep,
we're getting over 6,000 people at every game now. We're getting 6,000 people before the students even came back. So now the students are back. It's been even better. So it's great to play in front of a crowd like that. When we first got here 6 years ago, it was nothing like that. So it's nice to see the program growing and the community embrace us. And We're going to try to keep winning at home.
Well, good luck tonight. Keep it going. And as always, Nate, thanks for giving us some time.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Jeremy. Thanks, Howard.
That is Nate Oates, Western Hotline. 22 straight wins, tied for third longest in the country. Houston, 32. Tennessee, 23. UB is tied with Michigan. We'll wrap the show up in a moment when we get back. And Instigator's coming up top of the hour.
enjoyed the conversation with head coach Nate Oates. Talk about a guy that's just comfortable in his own skin, it seems, you know?
Fun guy to talk with. Yeah. You could talk anything about with
Not
with
afraid
Nate.
To just... talk about, like, hey, look, they got us playing Kentucky.
Ooh, yeah.
It's cool. I mean, I feel like if I'm a player,
hey,
you know.
Last year, as a guy said, yeah, we figure we could beat Arizona. They're soft. You know, I mean, he will tell you what he's thinking, which is really cool. He's always a lot of fun to have on the show. Sabres playing tonight. Don't forget, 7 o'clock, it's Florida Panthers. Instigator's going to get you set. If you're wondering about the out-of-town games tonight, everybody's playing. Pittsburgh is playing at New Jersey. Flyers home against Tampa. The Carolina Hurricanes are home against the Rangers. And Columbus and Montreal are playing in Quebec.
So it's the kind of night where chances are you're a win means you hold serve.
Big, yeah. You don't want to lose more ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instigator's on the way. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everybody.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.